Oh, what a beauty! What rare self-control! What a budding youth! In the midst of us all, who are passionately longing for her, she is moving about like one absolutely free from passion. Vidarkayanto Bahudha, Tam Sanyam Pramandakritam, Abhisambhavya Vishrambhat, Parya Prichchan Kumedasaha. Indulging in various speculations about the evening twilight, which appeared to them endowed with the form of a young woman, the wicked-minded asuras treated her with respect and fondly spoke to her as follows. Kasi kasyasi rambholu ko varthaste tra bhamani rupa drabina panyena durapakana vidatasi. Who are you, O pretty girl? Whose wife or daughter are you? And what can be the object of your appearing before us? Why do you tantalize us, unfortunate as we are, with the priceless commodity of your beauty? A purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The mentality of the demons is being enamored by the false beauty of this material world is expressed herein. The demoniac can pay any price for the skin beauty of this material world. They work very hard all day and night, but the purpose of their hard work is to enjoy sex life. Sometimes they misrepresent themselves as karma yogis, not knowing the meaning of the word yoga. Yoga means to link up with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or to act in Krishna consciousness. A person works very hard no matter in what occupation, and who offers the result of the work to the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is called a karma yogi. Who are you, O pretty girl? Whose wife or daughter are you? And what can be the object of your appearing before us? Why do you tantalize us, unfortunate as we are, with the priceless commodity of your beauty? The asuras, or demons, have attacked Lord Brahma with perverted desires in their hearts. What kind of an atrocious mentality they have. They want to exploit their own father, Brahma, who's the original guru of this universe, to enjoy sense gratification of the most sinful quality. Lord Brahma took shelter of the Lord, because whoever we are, Krishna is our only shelter. So the Lord told him to cast off that particular body. It turned into the evening twilight. So the same demons that were attacking their own father, they perceived the evening twilight as the form of a beautiful woman. Their passions became uncontrolled. Here, in these verses that we are reading this morning, they are praising the attributes and the qualities of this illusory form of a woman. They're glorifying this woman in a similar way as saintly persons glorify the Lord, talking about her beauty, talking about her very rare qualities, talking about their good fortune, that they're receiving the priceless commodity of seeing her beauty, and their misfortune that they are not having her. This is very similar to the prayers of the great Vaishnavas. The problem is, it is going in the wrong direction. What we find here is that same propensity to love Krishna, when it becomes influenced by the mode of passion and ignorance, it becomes most horrific. It becomes ghastly. Such a source of bondage. If only they can offer these prayers to the Lord, we would be honoring them. But because they are worshiping, they are offering these prayers to an illusory, perverted reflection of the Lord coming through the material energy, we condemn them. Rupa Goswami explains that just as a young man is attracted to a young girl, and a young girl is attracted to a young man, that same type of attraction should be directed toward Krishna. The soul is longing to be infatuated because Krishna is supremely infatuated. Krishna's infatuation steals our heart. He is Lord Hari. But similarly, Maya, who is his separated external energy, also has that power to infatuate and steal our hearts. And that is the Jivatma's independent free will. Whether we are going to be subordinate to the infatuation of Krishna's eternal beauty, or whether we are going to be subjugated by the infatuation to the temporary appearances of beauty of this world. Thus, the whole Vedic system is based on the principle of renunciation. Unless we renounce this temporary appearance of beauty, we cannot direct the energy of our hearts toward the real beauty of Krishna. They have completely lost their intelligence. And we're reading about it, and we're thinking, they're just crazy demons. How abominable. But actually, we have all inherited these qualities that appeared at the very beginning of this particular creation. The beginning of creation, this mentality manifested within this world. And everyone except those who are pure, unalloyed devotees is to one degree or another of the same consciousness. Maya is so powerful. Look at what she's doing to the eternal soul. These demons are part and parcel of Krishna. How cruel, how savage. They attack their own father for sex life. And then when he gave up his body by the will of the Lord, impure body, it is said, it turned into the twilight. And in the twilight, they're seeing, it wasn't even a woman, it was just the appearance. It wasn't even something beautiful, it was just the appearance of that. Something like a mirage in a desert. It looks like something, but it's not like that at all. Prabhupada explains when an animal is dying of thirst in the desert, it sees it the mirage. And similarly, human beings go through this same syndrome. Have any of you ever been into a deep desert, which is burning hot, and you are very thirsty? Has anyone ever been in that situation? We have been. We hitchhiked from Istanbul to Delhi, and probably 80% is just desert, going hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of kilometers just in deserts without any towns or villages anywhere to be seen. And there's no source of water, there's no source of food. There's just either sand or dry dirt. And when you want something, you start imagining that it's there. The nature of when the sun and the heat that is coming, emanating from the earth, when it all combines together, it makes the appearance of a very clear, transparent, ambrosial lake of water. It really does. It's not just in the books. We have seen with our own eyes many times. And you just want to get to that place. And when you're thirsty, your whole mind is immersed only in that. You can't even think of anything else because you want water, and there it is. You're dying for that water. When you're dying for something, and it's sitting right in front of you, it's a matter of life or death, it's difficult to think of anything else. If you're starving of thirst, literally starving, every organ of your body is just weeping and crying, give me water, give me lubrication, I'm drying up, I'm dying. You hear every limb speaking that. Every organ, every atomic particle of your body. This is what it's like to be starving of thirst. And there you see a very, very luxurious body of water. Are you thinking of anything else? Businessman thinking of the stock market. Husband thinking of wife. Wife thinking of children. No. All you could think of is that water. You're infatuated, enticed, obsessed with getting to that water. And you keep running after it. And the experience is, as you're running toward it, it just keeps getting farther and farther away. But it doesn't appear to be getting farther away. It appears that you're getting closer. But it's just, you just never get to it. Closer, you're running, 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 but it's still the same distance. You know the story of Kalyavana. He was running after Krishna. He was running so fast for Krishna. And Krishna was just walking. And however much he was running, and he was a powerful yaksha, malecha yaksha. The faster he ran, Krishna just very nicely walked. But there was always the same distance between them. Krishna's mystical potency. He manifests the same type of mystical potency through his material energy. You run and run and run and run to get what you see in front of you, but you just never really get there. And finally, and as you're running, what's happening? You're exerting that much more energy. And the running makes you more thirsty. It makes every organ and every limb cry louder because they're being exerted. People. And then sometimes, just to the madness of the mind, just because you're hope after hope you want to reach it, you think you actually reach it. You become crazy for that water. And then you start drinking it and drinking it and drinking it. And what do you drink? Hot, dry sand. And what does that do to your thirst? It's like putting fuel on fire. This is how Krishna has created material energy. Now, materialistic people, they do not understand this. They do not know the science behind how material energy works and why. So they just go on chasing after this mirage, birth after birth after birth after birth. Just utterly infatuated. But the very first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam explains the nature of material existence. It's a mirage. So we know. Now, for a devotee who is a neophyte, he knows it's a mirage. He knows there's no water there. But still, he's so conditioned to the thought that there is that he can't do, he knows he can't live with it and he knows he can't live without it. Some of you have this experience. Do you follow? Thus, we must redirect the same desire toward the real reservoir of unlimited nectar. That is Krishna. We must simultaneously restrain our senses from the pursuit of material enjoyment and engage our senses in the service of Lord Krishna. And to do this with sincerity. Tapasya is the basic element of bhakti. Vairagya vidya nidya bhakti yoga shikshashtamika purusha purana. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach us three principles, according to Srila Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya: Vairagya, Vidya, Bhakti. Vairagya means saying no to the illusory promises of Maya. Vidya means to cultivate knowledge, to understand the difference between knowledge and truth, knowledge and illusion. To understand what is the mirage and where is the real water. Essentially, that's what knowledge means. To discriminate between matter and spirit. Between what will bring us misery and what will bring us joy. If we don't have that knowledge, we don't know. Prabhupada said we must study his books. We must hear the classes every day. We have to be armed with the weapon, the sword of transcendental knowledge. Because that sword will cut the rope of material bondage that's dragging us again and again, birth after birth, to the objects of the senses. But we have to experience a higher taste. And that comes through service. Bhakti. Nine processes of bhakti. Beginning with hearing the glories of the Lord. Chanting the names and glories.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare.
We want to develop a genuine mood of service. How are we making spiritual advancement? We can tell by how we're becoming attached to the holy name and how we're becoming attached to serving without any material reward expected. It is not that advancement means that we're becoming famous or that we're becoming expert. Advancement doesn't mean what other people say about us or think about us. Actual advancement is to the degree we're developing an attraction to serve without expectations, and how we're developing an enthusiasm to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. And how do we make advancement? By performing vairagya, tapasya. And what is that tapasya? To, whether you feel or not, you be enthusiastic to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. And you be enthusiastic to serve and battle against your mind when it wants to do other things. This is real spiritual life. This is the most important principle. Everything is revealed to one who sincerely chants the holy names, who sincerely hears the glories of the Lord, in that spirit of really being a servant of the servant. Everything is revealed. And without that, nothing will be realized. However much we study, however much we meditate, nothing will be realized. The mode of passion and ignorance is so like ropes, gunas, that are just dragging us. And we have become so conditioned to be dragged that when we come to Krishna consciousness, sometimes it appears like an artificial situation. To control the senses is actually natural. But it appears artificial because we've been doing other things for so long. We've been trying to satisfy the mind and senses, and we're conditioned. It is our tendency to just let our mind and senses go in these different directions. However, as we let them go, they become more infatuated. Maya's potency is to bewitch, to bewilder, to infatuate. And of course, the ultimate infatuation of Maya is the infatuation of sex life, either gross or subtle, profit, adoration, distinction. People are infatuated by these things. And people of the grosser consciousness, just the beauty of the opposite sex. And in the age of Kali Yuga, people don't even discriminate between whether it's the opposite sex or not. Here we find these people, they were attracted to Brahma, their father. And then they're attracted to this twilight Mataji. No discrimination whatsoever. They just have this desire in the soul for pleasure, and they're just trying to find it an object to express it through everywhere and anywhere. And you can change the object, you can change the environment, but if your heart is still the same, then you'll just be looking, you'll just find another target somewhere else. This is the difficulty of material bondage. The soul is longing so much for pleasure, the pleasure of Krishna. It is explained in Bhagavatam that even if a man gives us his home, gives up his home and goes to the forest, he lives with his six wives, which are the five senses in the mind. So really, has he left home at all? He left one wife to live with six wives. Real renunciation doesn't mean just leaving home. Real renunciation means to engage one's mind and senses in spiritual activities. and to absorb yourself in those spiritual activities to the extent that those spiritual activities capture your consciousness. Bhakti is Krishna consciousness. We want our consciousness to be captivated by Krishna. That's the only way we can get it out of the captivation of Maya. And that can only take place when Krishna attracts us. It doesn't take much to be attracted by Maya, does it? I don't know, maybe you are very advanced. It doesn't take much. It's natural in the conditioned state. Maya just can infatuate you and attract you if you're just off guard for a second. But to be attracted to Krishna, we may have to do a whole life of sadhana to get that attraction for Krishna. So therefore, when we go into the streets and we see so many people just enjoying in so many ways, driving nice cars, wearing nice clothes, eating all kinds of food, listening to all kinds of music, having all kinds of parties and social events, what does it take to do that? Whether they're high class or low class by social status, it's all the same. They're just bewitched, enchanted by the illusory energy. And at every moment, there's just another target to infatuate your mind, to express that frustration. Actually, all sense gratification is an expression of frustration. Sense gratification is not enjoyment in the real sense. Our hearts are frustrated because we're lonely without Krishna. And we're just trying to find some object to somehow or other pacify that frustration. We need this, we need that. We need some objects. It may be people objects, it may be thing objects, but we just have to have all kinds of different things, and whatever we have, it may give us a little happiness now, but it's not enough. We have to keep getting something else, something more, something different. It's just frustration. Material life means frustration. And lust turns into anger. So much anger in this world. What people do to each other, it's unbelievable. So we are trying on the path of bhakti to resist these temptations by fully absorbing our minds in the all-attractive name, form, and service of Krishna. In this age of Kali Yuga, Krishna especially and very mercifully manifests himself in the form of his holy name. Therefore, we have to work very hard. We have to really struggle to somehow or other bring our mind back to the attraction of Krishna through the chanting of his name. Srila Prabhupada said, if you are not chanting 16 rounds carefully every day, at any moment you will be a victim of Maya. We have to show Krishna that we want him, and he will reciprocate and protect us. Very important. Somehow or other, if we can just connect our consciousness to Krishna, it is the perfection of life. Srila Prabhupada tells the story of that thief who was looking for some riches to steal. And he heard Srimad Bhagavat being discussed. They were talking about Krishna. He has peacock feather on his head. He has beautiful blue complexion, lotus eyes. Every limb is
all attractive.
And his mother, Yashoda, dresses him with gold and silver and diamonds and rubies and jewels. And that's what he was attracted to. So he went to Vrindavan, constantly meditating on the form of Krishna, so that he'll know who he is, so he could steal his jewels. And when he came to Vrindavan, by that time he was so engrossed in meditating on Krishna's form. And there was Krishna. Krishna happened to just be standing alone in the forest, the little boy. So he asked Krishna, "Please give me your jewels." Krishna said, "No, I cannot give you my jewels. Because what will my mother say if I give you my jewels?" He said, no, you can tell your mother you lost the jewels." She said, "But she doesn't believe me. I tell her so many things." So they were discussing in so many ways, and he was becoming very frustrated. Because whatever argument he gave for little Krishna to give his jewels, Krishna very cleverly had a counter-argument. But as he was talking to Krishna, longing with great eagerness to find Krishna, he became completely purified. He realized that your mercy is the most priceless jewel. He gave up all his material desires and surrendered to Krishna. We read about Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj, he was so much infatuated by the desire that he would somehow or other get a kingdom greater than his own father or grandfather. 5-year-old child. But Narada Muni was expert. He taught him, you constantly meditate on the form of Krishna and you constantly chant his holy names. He gave him a mantra. Dhruva Maharaj's mind was fixed on that mantra at all times. And he was performing all kinds of austerities, but what was the purpose of the austerities? When Dhruva Maharaj was eating only the fallen leaves every so many days, and later on he was only breathing every so many weeks, it wasn't that he was performing the tapasya for tapasya's sake alone. It was so that his consciousness would become fully engrossed without any distraction or diversion from the name and the form of the Lord that he was meditating on within his heart. So you should know, whatever austerities we do in our spiritual life, it's really only for the purpose of developing deeper attention to the chanting of the holy name. So Dhruva Maharaj, he was so absorbed in this process that the Lord Vishnu revealed himself within Dhruva Maharaj's heart. He was seeing the Lord. Meanwhile, standing on one toe without breathing, the entire universe was being suffocated because he was holding all the air of the universe within his own body. A little 5-year-old child. This is the power of his meditation on the Lord. Because ultimately the Lord is the cause of all causes, the source of everything. By his meditation on Krishna within his heart, he was able to control the life breath of the whole universe. The demigods approached Brahma. Brahma approached Vishnu. Vishnu said, "Yes, this is my little Dhruva. I will take care of things." So then, the form of the Lord within Dhruva's heart disappeared. And this brought him so much suffering. He was immersed in Vipralamba. So much separation. He wasn't thinking anything about kingdoms or father or anything that happened in the past, present, or future. He was only thinking that I have attained this beautiful darshan. And then the darshan disappeared. So he opened his eyes, and the same form that he saw within his heart was standing right in front of him. And the Lord offered him benediction. Dhruva Maharaj said, I was looking for broken pieces of glass in the form of the pleasures of this world. But now I have found the rare, priceless diamond of your darshan. That is a fact. Krishna is like a diamond, and all the pleasures of this world are like broken pieces of glass. They're actually worthless. They're sources of pain. And the greatest pain is that they divert our attention away from Krishna. The physical sufferings that karma creates, whether it be on the mental level or on the gross level, that's not what's so bad about materialistic life. What's really bad is it takes our consciousness away from the reservoir of all pleasure, Krishna. That is a great shame. But unless we understand very carefully the nature of the consciousness of the demon, we cannot properly take shelter of the nature of the consciousness of the devotee. So here in Srimad Bhagavatam, the nature of the consciousness of a demon is so nicely being explained. And throughout the scriptures we find this. How the demons become completely enslaved by the objects of the senses. Infatuated, possessed, like a ghost. Maya is like a ghost that haunts us. It makes us into somebody we're really not. When someone's ghostly haunted, they do all kinds of crazy things that they would never do. It's not them, it's a ghost. We're all possessed like ghosts by Maya's allurements. And look at what type of crazy things people do. Look at the miserable mental situation of so many people in this world. In Kali Yuga, Nunam Pramata Kurute Vikarama, people are simply mad. They're simply mad. One mirage in the desert after another. Desperately. But it always ends up in terrible embarrassment. So we are so fortunate that Srimad Bhagavatam is very clearly explaining exactly what. If only these demons would be saying the same things about Krishna, they would be purifying their lives. But they're saying it about an illusory form of a woman that's not even a woman. It's just the twilight appearing that way. Similarly, whatever is beautiful that we're looking for, whether it is flesh, blood, or whatever we may think, the five elements, it's not really what it appears to be. It's just an illusory perception. We have said many times the example that we're just programmed to see things in a certain way by Maya to infatuate us. Your eyes are like programmed to see a certain way. What if your eyes were slightly programmed different? If you had keener vision and you looked at a person, a beautiful person, all you would see is different cells and molecules and bacteria just crawling around on this form. Would you be attracted? Did you ever see under a high power microscope what flesh looks like? Is it attractive? It's actually disgusting. But that's what it is. But why? Why we're attracted to it? Because Maya just programs our vision and our brain to just see it in a certain way. A certain aspect or wavelength of it, just to infatuate your mind. You're not seeing it as it is. As it is means all kinds of cells, all kinds of molecules, all kinds of atoms, neutrons, electrons floating around. All kinds of little bacterias and worms going around in it all. Huh? That's what you would see. If you looked at the object of your lust, you would probably vomit if you saw from a different perspective of reality. Hare Krishna. Similarly, if our vision was a little farther away, again, there would be no attraction. So Maya just programs us in such a way to see everything as it is not. Not as it is, but Maya means that which is not. It exists, but not the way you see it. So we're entrapped. We have to work very hard to get out. Material life is hopeless. It's useless going on in this way, birth after birth after birth. And death could come at any moment. And then what? Another birth. This human life is so rare, so precious. It's meant for tapasya. And that tapasya is actually joyful by Lord Chaitanya's mercy. Just nice association. Nice spirit of service. This is the essence of all spiritual wealth. To become a humble servant. To develop the mood to really want to serve. And to really, really sincerely endeavor to attentively chant the holy names of Krishna. The only way out of the desert of Maya. It's the only way to resist the mirages of illusion. Is to humbly serve. Eagerly serve. And really, really try to become absorbed in the chanting of the holy names of Krishna. Any questions?
Maharaj, at the neophyte stage, as you explained, we know that materialistic pursuits are like a mirage, but we somehow we can't live without it, and at the same time we can't live with it. Because we understand after coming to an association of devotees. So at this particular moment, how do we face this challenge? At this particular time, what do we do to ensure that we are not allured by Maya?
We have to very carefully follow the teachings of Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas. If we just follow those teachings, we will be protected. Associate with devotees, avoid the association of materialistic people. Engage your mind and senses in devotional activities, in the service of the Lord. Do not engage it in sense gratification. Hear and chant the glories of the Lord strictly, regularly. If we follow the desire of Krishna, he will protect us. Otherwise, we're hopeless. Thank you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.